produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today. Green Party of America calls for an end to marijuana prohibition. From Washington, D.C., Green Party candidates and leaders called for an end to the war on drugs, calling national and state drug policy a, quote, war on American citizens, close quote, and a waste of national resources. Quote, draconian drug laws, mandatory sentencing, zero tolerance, and three-strike statutes have been used to lock away hundreds of thousands of young people, poor people, African Americans, and other people of color in prisons and prevent them from living productive lives, close quote, said Clifford Thornton, Green Party candidate for governor of Connecticut. Mr. Thornton also serves on Normal's board of directors. Greens especially called for immediate decriminalization of marijuana, citing the 2005 FBI Uniform Crime Report, showing that police arrested an estimated 786,545 persons for marijuana violations in 2005, the highest number ever recorded, and that 88% of these were charged with mere possession. Quote, marijuana prohibition needs to be repealed immediately. Death from marijuana use is nearly zero, while hundreds of thousands die every year using alcohol and nicotine, close quote, said Matt Abel, Green Party candidate for Congress in Michigan's 9th District, member of Normal and a criminal defense attorney who has handled numerous marijuana cases. He continued, quote, locking up Americans for such offenses is a waste of lives and a waste of about $69 billion per year in taxpayer dollars. Furthermore, the prohibition against medical marijuana has denied relief for people who suffer various symptoms of AIDS and other serious diseases, close quote. Green Party leaders noted that the war on drugs, supported by both Democratic and Republican parties, has been used as an excuse for massive rights violations, including denial of Fourth Amendment guarantees against warrantless search and seizure, and Fifth Amendment guarantees of due process, and for military attacks against Colombia, Panama, and other Latin American countries. Quote, there is almost no difference between Democratic and Republican administrations or majorities in Congress when it comes to drug policy, close quote, said Kevin Zeese, Maryland Green candidate for the U.S. Senate and co-founder of the Drug Policy Alliance. Mr. Zeese continued, quote, the war on drugs has been an obvious model for President Bush's so-called war on terror. Both programs attempt to induce fear in the American public and target certain populations for vilification and incarceration. Both programs benefit corporate lobbies with enormous political influence, the defense and security industries, and the growing private prison business that makes its profits by filling up cells. Close quote. We have links to the Green Party at normalaudiostash.com. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. We have some new Normal Podcast studios online in southern New Jersey where we're recording today. And thanks everyone for all of your emails of support as we moved our equipment across country last week. We went through New Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and now beautiful, gorgeous New Jersey. In every one of those states, there's an active Normal chapter working towards reform. And let me tell you, all the folks I talked to at the truck stops on I-40 and I-70 were 110% for marijuana legalization. Even the Illinois state trooper who was kind enough to show me the way to some diesel fuel. And trying to make 2,300 miles across country as quick as possible, it really was a joy to rediscover America, our strikingly beautiful country in both land and people. We have such great freedom here, great freedom that is, unless you're a marijuana smoker. But seeing the towns, cities, farms, and economy motels of this country has reinstilled the notion that marijuana legalization is the single most important issue in the United States. Prohibition is one of the last vestiges of officially sanctioned oppression and racism left in America. And marijuana legalization isn't just about marijuana smokers. It's about increasing freedom in America for every single person here. With all that said, it is a great privilege to bring you this next piece from the executive director of Normal, one of the hardest working men on K Street, Alan St. Pierre. Alan brings down the curtain on the opposition to Colorado's Amendment 44.
There's an anti-cannabis cabal in Colorado. Oh, what webs we weave when first we set out to deceive. Such could be the narrative this fall for the opponents of Colorado's Amendment 44, the Alcohol and Marijuana Equalization Initiative. It comes as no surprise to Normal who the real opposition to marijuana law reform is. Most prominently are the federal government and its anti-marijuana agencies such as the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA, Office of National Drug Control Policy, ONDCP, and the National Institute on Drug Abuse, NIDA. Two, federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies. And three, zealous, morally conservative, non-governmental anti-drug advocates who often serve as front groups for government agencies who wish to derail state and local initiative processes but are otherwise prohibited from doing so. All three dark factions have come together in Colorado attempting to stymie Safer's bold efforts to remove all state penalties or fines for adults who possess 1 ounce of marijuana. First, the media in Colorado discovered that employees at the DEA tried to conjure and coordinate a supposedly local grassroots effort against Safer's pro-marijuana ballot initiative. Though not technically illegal, the efforts of federal law enforcement to thwart voters' will in Colorado did not sit well with the state's major media outlets. DEA should butt out of the state's ballot debate, read one headline. Ambushing the pot initiative, another. Next came the out-of-state activists. Thankfully, it did not take too long for the local media in Colorado to catch on to who these anti-cannabis carpetbaggers are and what they really hope to achieve in defeating Safer's pro-marijuana ballot initiative on November 7th. First on the chopping block was John Pastuovic, a communications professional from Illinois who previously helped coordinate an anti-marijuana propaganda campaign to undermine medical marijuana legislation in that state. Interestingly, Mr. Pastuovic has worked for GW Pharmaceuticals, a company in the United Kingdom that has developed an oral cannabis spray for medical purposes. Does Mr. Pastuovic have a financial interest in opposing marijuana legalization? To help answer that question, consider that his Colorado partner in anti-pot propaganda is Dr. Andrea Barthwell, a former deputy drug czar at ONDCP and current consultant with GW Pharmaceuticals. With the hired guns and propagandists from the Beltway and Big Pharma somewhat exposed and neutralized, anti-marijuana forces now turn to a local version of a modern-day Carrie Nation, Drug Watch International's Beverly Kennard. Predictably, Mrs. Kennard only had to open her mouth to have her dress lifted above her head, exposing her lunatic fringe qualities. Some of her more notable claims? marijuana use is a form of mind control, and that simply touching non-psychoactive cannabis, otherwise known as hemp, gives one cancer. With the opposition of local wingnuts, hired anti-marijuana mercenaries, and the feds well exposed, nakedly so, that has left the job of staunchly opposing marijuana legalization in Colorado to the state's Attorney General, John Souther. Souther's flaccid defense of marijuana prohibition in Colorado media comes in the form of rip-and-read talking points straight from the feds, containing the ONDCP's typical reefer madness. Today's marijuana is uber-potent. Coffee shops in the Netherlands resulted in tripling teenage marijuana use. Today's marijuana use is so strong that there has been a six-fold increase in emergency room visits since the mid-1990s. In the last decade, there has been a 162% increase in drug treatment admissions because of marijuana. However, times may have changed regarding marijuana and the media, because the media in Colorado don't buy Souther's anti-sativa screed, and he is rightly being panned. Safer's efforts in Colorado to legalize 1 ounce of marijuana for responsible adult use is a true microcosm of the multi-decade-old attempts by the prohibitionists to defeat the general public's efforts to reform marijuana laws. As marijuana law reform continues to march across the states, the lessons learned in Colorado serve the marijuana law reform movement well, and more importantly, for our democracy. This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, in Washington, D.C.
Next up on the Audio Stash today, we have an interview with Jack Cole, the Executive Director of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Jack Cole is a 26-year veteran of the New Jersey State Police and served as an undercover narcotics officer for 14 years. Jack witnessed the drug war in America from every angle and went on to help found LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. We'll be featuring a number of LEAP members in the Audio Stash in the future. LEAP speakers often travel to speak at NORML chapter meetings and events. Today, we'll speak with Mr. Cole about his personal experience and the role of LEAP. We have links to Law Enforcement Against Prohibition at normalaudiostash.com. Jack, welcome to the Audio Stash today.
Thanks for the invitation. Glad to be here.
Wonderful to speak with you today, Jack. Let's talk about LEAP. First, how and when did Law Enforcement Against Prohibition begin?
Well, we started it in 2002. When we started it, we had 5 founding members, all of us former cops. And in those 4 short years, we've grown to almost 6,000 members today. And we're not just cops anymore. We're cops, judges, prosecutors, prison wardens, even DEA and FBI agents. And we're all calling for an end to drug prohibition.
Jack, you served on the New Jersey State Police in the Narcotics Division. What brought you to the point where you were against prohibition?
Well, I actually did that for 14 of my 26-year career in the New Jersey State Police. And after just 3 years of working out undercover, actually living with those folks on the street, I discovered that I had been lied to a lot in my training, because we were trained to go to war against an enemy that was supposed to be the vilest enemy on the earth, people that would just as soon kill you as look at you. And after 3 years out on the street living with those folks, it suddenly occurred to me that I liked a lot of the people I was working on better than some of the people I was working for. The only difference between them and me was they wanted to put something in their body that I didn't want to put in mine.
And with over 5,000 members, LEAP now is a very strong endorsement of legalization. What's the common factor that brings law enforcement personnel into LEAP?
The common factor is that we fought this war for 36 years. It's the longest war in the history of the United States. And over that time, we've spent over $1 trillion on this war. All we have to show for it is that each year we arrest another 1,800,000 people in this country for nonviolent drug offenses. And we imprison as many as we can. We have 2.2 million people in prisons in this country now, about seven times as many as any country in, for instance, Europe imprisons per capita. And despite all this money so ill spent, all these lives pretty much destroyed that we arrest and imprison, today drugs are cheaper, they're more potent, and they're far easier for our kids to get than they were in 1970 at the beginning of the war when I started buying them undercover. Now, that's a failed policy, and everybody in law enforcement realizes that.
And, Jack, how are you trained to treat marijuana smokers as a law enforcement officer?
When I was, I started at the beginning of the war, and that was back in the reefer madness days, even worse than it is today, although you look at our drug czar today, and he's trying to say that marijuana is the worst drug in the United States. Back then, we were trained literally to go to war against these people. I, from what I had heard from them, I would have almost imagined before I went out there that these folks had horns growing out of their heads. You know, I thought they were almost demonic. And the truth is, of course, they're just us. And when I say that, according to DEA, before we started the war on drugs, they said that about 4 million people in this country had used an illegal drug. And by the year 2001, DEA was saying 110 million people have used an illegal drug in this country. That means that's most of the adults in this country. So this is not a war on drugs. This is a war on people, and it's virtually a war on us. It's a war on our kids. It's a war on our parents, it's a war on ourselves.
Jack, you speak to audiences around America and around the world. I have to wonder, you know, what do other cops say when you're in their town?
Well, the cops are very respectful to all of us. We have a number of speakers. We have well over 100 speakers. We've given over 2,200 presentations already in the last 3 years since we created our Speakers Bureau. And I've personally actually given more than 500 of those talks myself all around the world. And no matter where we go, our reception is the same. We don't usually talk to people who would be on our side. We think it's a waste of our time. We go out and we speak to civic groups, professional groups, religious and educational organizations, but mainly civic groups, things like Rotaries, Gowanus Clubs, Lions Clubs, Chambers of Commerce, Chapters of Military Officers of America. These are very conservative organizations. And we are sure that about 80% of those audiences agree with what we say after 30 minute to an hour talk. So, but you were asking specifically about police. Let me tell you, we started talking to police officers 2 years ago when we've been to now 18 national and international police conferences. Law enforcement conference with judges, corrections, police officers, DEA, FBI agents. We set up a educational booth there at their conference. It's there for the whole conference, and we staff it with a number of our speakers. And we keep very intricate track of how these folks feel after we talk to them on a one-to-one basis. And we're very aggressive. We don't sit behind our tables and wait for people to come to us because we figure, again, that way we'd only get the people that agree with us. We stand out in the aisles, and anyone that comes down that aisle, we got them by the elbow saying, hey, you heard about law enforcement against prohibition? We're cops, too. Can we talk to you for a minute about the war on drugs? Less than 1% of them refuse to talk to us. And out of all the ones that do talk to us, after we're through talking, we write down, did they agree, disagree, or were they undecided at the end? And we found that consistently, only 6% want to continue the war on drugs after they speak to us, 14% are undecided, and an astounding 80% agree with us. And the most interesting thing about that 80% is until we came along, there's just a tiny handful of those folks that ever realized that anyone else in law enforcement felt the way they do. These folks are so concerned about being labeled soft on drugs, soft on crime, that they're afraid to even talk to each other about what they really believe.
And so often I hear about these moments of epiphany, like Norm Stamper talks about this realization he had as a beat cop. But what is it that makes officers stay silent about their daily experience?
If you really came out, for instance, it was 1973 when I decided, after 3 years undercover, that the only way we could do anything to lower the incidence of addiction to drugs in this country would be to legalize them and regulate them and keep them out of the hands of our children. But I didn't tell anybody that in my organization because I knew if I did, I might not have been fired, but I certainly wouldn't have got promoted. You know, I certainly wouldn't have been in, on the move up. Certainly the people who were in those jobs want to move ahead just like people in any other jobs.
So you and LEAP are breaking this taboo. It must take a lot of courage to bring this LEAP message into FBI and DEA conventions and conferences.
Well, at first, we felt like maybe it would take some courage, but it really doesn't at all. I have never had anybody disrespect me or, you know, get personal about my views. I've had a number of them that don't agree with me, but they were always just as respectful as could be. And well, they should be, because I spent 26 years of my life putting my life on the line, just as they did, to try to stop drug abuse in this country. And I and the other 6,000 people at LEAP haven't changed our minds about that at all. What we've changed our minds about is a war on drugs is not the way to go about it. The way to go about it is to end drug prohibition, just like we ended alcohol prohibition in 1933, because as law enforcers, we know that when we ended that terrible law, the next morning, Al Capone and all these smuggling buddies were out of business. They were off the streets. They were out of a job. That meant they weren't out there killing each other to control the market. They weren't killing cops charged with fighting that useless war. And they weren't killing kids caught in crossfire. All the things that happen today under the new drug prohibition. So if we ended prohibition, we could, one, save a lot of lives from violent crimes that wouldn't be committed. Two, nobody would have to die from overdose deaths. No one dies, by the way, from an overdose because they shoot more and more dope to get higher and higher. They die because they don't know how much of that powder they're buying is really the drug and how much is the cutting agent. Too much drug, you're dead. It's like Russian roulette without a gun. Three, we could prevent 50% of all the new cases of AIDS and hepatitis that will occur in this country this year and next year and every year afterwards, because the Center for Disease Control says that's how many cases can be traced directly back to drug users sharing needles. And four, we could lower the number of people abusing drugs and addicted to drugs considerably if we legalized the drugs and regulated them. And we know that this works because the place that came closest to it is Switzerland, and after a 10-year period of them giving free government heroin to heroin users in that country, they have had an 82% reduction in the expected cases of new heroin users. That means the kids aren't picking it up. They're not using it. And they're not using it because it's being given away free in clinics, so there's no drug dealers on the streets to sell the drugs, which means they're not going to kill each other, cops or kids, and they're not in the neighborhoods to entice young novices to pick up that deadly drug. We would just be so much better off with legalization.
Jack, I know you're headed out soon to the UK to do some speaking tours, and it was in London that just a few regular police officers brought about a big change in how cannabis is treated there. Is there something unique about the UK that made that possible?
Well, I don't think it's unique, first off. It's just not the United States. And to us at LEAP, we feel that legalizing cannabis is, drug policy reform 101. That's just should be an obvious thing to do. because we want to legalize them all. We know that everything will get better if we legalize them all. But you were asking about England. Of course, you know, the Netherlands decriminalized marijuana all the way back in 1976. And if you compare the stats of their per capita use of soft drugs with the United States, you find that we use twice as much soft drugs, marijuana and hashish, per capita as them. And we use four times as much hard drugs, heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, per capita as they do. We have four times the rate of murders in this country that they do. So apparently, you know, decriminalizing and legalizing is the way to go. Now, we don't like decriminalization at LEAP, but it's certainly better than what we have today. The reason we don't like decriminalization is when you decriminalize, you only decriminalize for the user. Everybody else in the chain, the grower, the producer, the distributor, the transporter, those are all criminals, which means the price remains unbelievably high on these drugs, and it, of course it is this obscene profit motive that makes it a thing that people are willing to kill each other on the street corner in order to control the market. If we legalize those drugs, the price would drop, the bottom would drop out of it, anybody could afford it, and people wouldn't be on the streets selling it.
So in the end here, the pro-marijuana legalization message, this is a pro-cop message. Legalization helps police do their jobs.
Oh, absolutely, and it saves law enforcement lives. But it really helps them do their job. You know, in 1950, police solved 90% of the murders in the United States. Last year, they solved 50% of the murders. Now, ask yourself, why would that be? They're much better educated. They have far better technology. They've got more money. There's more of them. Why would they only be solving about half the murders that they used to? The only reason that we at LEAP can think of is because they have involved so much time and money and effort into chasing drug users around, and most of those drug users that they're chasing around are peaceful marijuana smokers.
Jack, this has been a wonderful discussion today. Thanks for joining us here on the Audio Stash, and I look forward to speaking with you again very soon.
Thank you very much for the invite. Bye.
Jack Cole is the Executive Director of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition and a former New Jersey State Police narcotics officer. We have links to LEAP at normalaudiostash.com. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow.